Welcome to the A-News Podcast. This is episode 68 for June 15th, 2018. This podcast covers anarchist activity, ideas, and conversations from the previous week. This podcast is designed to be useful to anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Give us feedback and constructive criticism at our email address, podcast@anarchistnews.org. Most stories have more information at the non-sectarian anarchist news site, anarchistnews.org.
June 14th, 2018. We are more than a month into an exploration of clear thinking and communication. And some members of the anarchist news community asked why there was a return to fundamentals. This is part two of a new segment on the A-News podcast entitled The Praxis of Pragmatics. And since you've taken the time to ask the questions, I'm taking the liberty of explaining why there are no answers. Last week, this segment took us back to a time when humans were anarchists and suggested that one of the reasons a discussion about conversation is important is because once it started happening outside of our head and we began to persuade one another, really bad shit started to happen. For me, this seemed like a pretty compelling reason about why anarchists might be interested in the mechanics of convincing, persuading, and coercing, yet I find myself still recording a second segment. Before we continue, I like to say that I think it's important to listen to helpful criticisms, and with this in mind, I'd like to visit a question that was raised during a conference call we enjoyed on the A-News IRC chat. The question was, since so many anarchist audio and video platforms focus on theory, could we maybe focus on something oriented a little more towards action? Well, friend, the answer is as you expected. It's really fucking complicated. While I might have suggested with very little evidence in part one that humans and anarchists were one and the same, and that it was our ability to communicate and persuade one another that led to the human-anarchist separation, part two is fast-forwarding hundreds of thousands of years. Today, we are humans first, and anarchists second. We find ourselves in an era where humans and anarchists alike attempt to camouflage their intentions and covertly manipulate us to engage in their desired outcomes. As engineers are known for building solutions that work, and politicians are known for building solutions that do not, anarchists, just a decade or two ago, were known for critical thinking, a skill which is our only defense against the assholes that surround us. Common themes of such transgressions include undesirable influence from the market. However, well-adapted anarchists can also identify the innate authoritarianism of passive-aggressive communication, the lazy insistence of fallacy, the arrogance of bias, and the pitfalls of undeclared expectations and indirect language. George Orwell, in his essay Politics and the English Language, describes such communication as being designed to make lies sound truthful and murder respectable, and to give an appearance of solidarity to pure wind. Later in the essay, he says, such language has to consist largely of euphemism, question begging, and sheer cloudy vagueness. Yet the anarchist does have one clear vulnerability against such linguistic attacks, which is that there is no anarchism. There is no we anarchists. There is no us. For anarchists, there is no doctrine, platform, or manifesto which any one of us would ever agree upon. And should you happen across an anarchist in the street who does, ask a Buddhist what they would do. As some of you may have read the pamphlet Fighting for Our Lives by CrimeThink, you might already be familiar with their position that to say anarchists subscribe to anarchism is like saying pianists subscribe to pianism. There is no anarchism, but there is anarchy, or rather, there are anarchies. And here is a very important distinction, and one which deviates from last week's episode. We are humans first, and anarchists second. Alfredo M. Bonanno says in his piece, The Anarchist Tension, which has been translated from Italian, anarchism is not a concept that can be locked up in a word like a gravestone. It is not a political theory. It is a way of conceiving life, and young or old as we may be, is not something final. It is a stake we must play day after day, and when we wake up in the morning and put our feet on the ground, we must have good reason for getting up. If we don't, it makes no difference whether we are anarchists or not. We might as well stay in bed and sleep. And to have a good reason, we must know what we want to do, because for anarchism, for the anarchist, there is no difference between what we do and what we think, but there is a continual reversal of theory into action and action into theory. While Al uses the term we, I think one can gather that he is speaking of the self. That you and me need to have a keen understanding not only of what it means to be an anarchist, but what it means to be human, and how in both of those aspects of our experience, it is important to know why you have found the motivation to carry on, even among all the domestication and the drudgery. There are those, however, who have a very different story to tell. As we discussed last week, there is an impetus for some to practice good conversation in order to communicate with others, and there are those who practice good conversation in order to communicate with themselves. When we think of anarchism as being a concept set in stone, we're reminded by the wise that nothing in this world, in fact, is. Buddhist hermits living far from civilization in huts they have crafted in the middle of the forest have quite a bit to say on the subject. Does being close to nature influence your practice? A student asks in an amateur documentary entitled Amongst White Clouds. The teacher replies, "Nature is a delusion." What is nature? Delusion is nature, and nature is delusion. The student asks, "The clothes we wear, the food we eat, are they not from nature?" And the teacher replies, "Our food and clothes are natural." "Well, if that's nature, then go sit on that rock your whole life and don't move. Your belly will become full. Clothes will crawl onto your body and cover you. This is nature." As we consider our teacher's meaning, I will share the words of yet another, whom I believe can really complement the first and define our understanding as we move forward. The teacher says, "If you do not have any ability, you're like a blind person. You want to liberate beings, but you can't find the path yourself. People with experience, they can explain the path. They've been to the land of no creation and no destruction. They've entered the fortress. They come back down this road and write it all down. They tell everyone, if you haven't been there, you can't lead anyone down that road, and you can't liberate anyone." You see, to answer the question of what might an anarchist do outside of theory is a challenging one, because we are all on our own path. We all have our own study. Anyone who interrupts us on the path and says, "Here, I have the answer, follow me," is trouble. And we, as anarchists, know this. With this in mind, to separate the very personal study from what should also be a very personal interpretation of action invites me to wonder what doing or building something in general is exactly. It will not, in my opinion, make anarchism happen, or in some way increase anarchism, as it were. Anarchism for who? Some practices of doing might even grow the population of anarchists, but this even in itself is of questionable value. What kinds of anarchists? And why would we be motivated to see the population grow, since there is little evidence that your anarchism and mine are similar enough to warrant a shared title? When it comes to defining the Taoist concept of Wu Wei, one has said, a sage does not occupy themselves with the affairs of the world. Wu may be translated as not have or without, and Wei translated as do, act, serve, govern, or effort. The literal meaning of Wu Wei, therefore, is without action, without effort, or without control, and is often included in the paradox Wei Wu Wei, meaning action without action, govern without governing, or effortless doing. In the Tao Te Ching, Chapter 2, one can read, the sage is occupied with the unspoken and acts without effort, teaching without verbosity, producing without possessing, creating without regard to result, claiming nothing, the sage has nothing to lose. Taoist philosophy recognizes that the universe already works harmoniously according to its own ways. As a person exerts their will against or upon the world, they disrupt the harmony that already exists. This is not to say that a person should not exert agency and will. Rather, it is how one acts in relation to the natural processes that already exist. This brings me to an important distinction in the language of anarchists. To live independently means that one enjoys a life which includes the fulfillment of all of their wants and needs, and that no one else is necessary to enjoy that fulfillment. Interdependence, however, is what we might call a life wherein one's life includes others in the fulfillment of those wants and needs. Autonomous is an ancient Greek word coming from auto, or self, and nomos, law. Hence, when combined, it is understood as one who gives oneself one's own law. Autonomy, in my opinion, differs from independence. In both scenarios, we must practice good conversation. But when it comes to a life of interdependence, it may actually be considered of higher importance. In order for everyone to be autonomous, everyone must be at liberty to walk their own path. This is no easy feat, as disagreements invariably arise, and this is a compelling motivation to learn the mechanics of good conversation. When we talk of structure and of organizing, we miss one very great detail, that nothing is set in stone. Organizations and structures inevitably crumble. Unexpected outcomes persist, and so we must rely on the only anarchist tool strong enough to persist through such uncertainty, the practice of good conversation. It is of dire importance that we end our distraction with physical infrastructure. As the concept of brick and mortar continues to fade in so many dimensions of life, and commit ourselves to the only God there is, serendipity. While anarcho-creationists believe that not only there is one homogeneous identification of what anarchism is, but that our efforts and projects somehow appear fully formed, flawless and perfect, without prototypes and failures along the way. Those of us who have walked the path before know that no such thing exists. Whenever someone claims that they will lead we anarchists to the promised land with one great revolutionary project that they could accomplish if only they had all the help required, I can't help but think, oh Vanguard, should I only run into you along the road, and that you might tell me precisely what anarchists should believe.
This week we have a guest editorial by Julian Langer titled, Why Anarchists Are Not Architects. Where we live, this place, this space, this moment, this environment, is largely the product of the development of cities, which is for the most part the result of the work of architects. But what is a city, and who is this person called an architect? Within much of our radical environmentalist and eco-anarchist discourse, cities and the agricultural colonial system they require to be sustainable and civilization are synonymous. Cities and the mechanics of their machinery are designed by architects. The buildings, the layout, the means of transportation, walls and gates are the product of the work of architects. And it feels reasonably safe to say that what architects do is architecture. So, what the fuck is architecture? Architecture is the production of built space. But what is built space? When I was a kid, I'd go to the train station with my mother's parents, catch a train into central London, come out of South Kensington train station, and find myself with the monolithic structures that are the London Natural History Museum and the Victoria and Albert Museum in front of me. Analytic philosopher of aesthetics, Nelson Goodman, argues that works of architecture contain within them symbolic meaning that is referential, standing in for something. If you've ever seen these two buildings, you'll be aware that they are colossal, grand works, pompous in the way that the British do best. Their construction would have required the labor of a great many workers and materials made available through technological processes such as mining and glasswork. Inside these buildings, I would walk in to find stuffed animals, plastic recreations of beasts, the fossilized remnants of ancient creatures like dinosaurs who mankind has triumphed over, as evidenced by their now being in this grand building built by civilization and the rewards of British authority across the world, taken from those cultures Britain had bested in military and economic might. Those buildings stand in reference to and as representations of British civilization's apparent authority over the natural world and other civilized spaces created by other architects. And it seems that architecture has an entirely social function, in that architects build societies. This entails a political aspect. Well, politics is affairs of the polis, of the city, where architecture is used to transmit the authority of the ideology of civilization. This is something that Marxists, like Althusser and Zizek, have commented on, when discussing material ideological apparatus. But I shan't go into this anymore. So, architecture is the construction of built space, which symbolically stands in reference to ideology and authority. But again, what is built space? So far, I have only commented on what built space signifies regarding the interpretation of semantic content and with regards to semiotics. But built space seems to me to be the construction of a territory. Territorialization for the Deleuze fans through architecture. But wait, don't birds make nests and bees hives? Isn't this built space? Are birds and bees architects? What about tribal communities who make huts for shelter? Is this built space? I would say no. The difference between birds, bees, tribes, and architects seems to me to be a qualitative difference. But wait again, I can hear the reductive materialist nihilists already muttering about how qualia is an illusion due to the evolutionary mistake of human consciousness. So before I go on, let's briefly address this so these nihilists can quit grumbling. I'm going to leave out the immediacy of radically empirical positivistic sensualism, which makes qualitative experience obvious to me, and focus on something that would seem to better fit their aesthetic. Instead, I will use a more mathematical approach. There seems to me to be a qualitative difference between the differing states of water, such as steam, liquid, and ice. These different states hold different qualities within the world, and these extensive qualitative differences are born from differing quantitative intensities in heat levels. This account of qualitative differences that I have borrowed from Deleuze might not definitively convince every nihilist of the existence of qualitative differences, but it will do for this piece. So moving on, the difference between nests, beehives, tribal communities, and other created environments, which human and non-human animals make for themselves and the constructed built space of civilization, designed through the mathematics, engineering, and sciences of architecture, is one regarding intensity of properties within the space, such as materials used, labor to produce, and degree of technological mediation, leading to qualitative differences. So, besides the hermeneutic and semiotic aspects of all of this, relating to authority and ideology, why the fuck should this matter at all to anarchists? Aren't anarchists supposed to be focused nearly entirely on discussing what solidarity means and how to practice that? When anarchists talk about sabotage, they aren't talking about buildings and roads, certainly not in Portland. Anarchists reclaim the streets and don't destroy them, right? And isn't anarchist conversation about buildings almost entirely meant to be about squatting them and only occasionally about smashing coffee shop franchise windows? Also, aren't anarchists, like architects, all about building things, such as movements, societies, and social structures with ideological aims? While this might be what much of anarchism is about, I'd say that this has nothing to do with anarchy. For example, it seems to me that the primal anarchy of termites, Japanese knotweed, hurricanes and volcanoes, their creative destruction, is not about building spaces, but it is the wild process of will to power and life. As life impacts against the built space of civilization, it destroys it. This is why civilization requires so much work to be maintained. And as we know, save for the anarcho-Marxists, anarchists hate work. Perhaps if anarchists spent less time trying to build stuff, playing architect, designing societies through their sciences and reductive mathematical approaches, and more time destroying built space and nurturing what grows out of it, then there might be more anarchy in this domesticated world. There are no actual anarchist architects, but there have been anarchist cities, though civilization might have for now taken them due to the work of archaeologists and colonialist adventurers. The ruins of Ciudad Perdida, of Scarabray, of Calakmul, Angkor, and Machu Picchu might have been home to many anarchists, human or non-human, after they were abandoned. And while they once might have been intended as symbolic references to the historic might and authority of civilization, it seems to me that we can now view them as signs that history will collapse into the beautiful wild abyss, with forests growing upon the bodies of architects.
Topic of the week. A revolution is upon us. Given that we have an idiot in the White House, given that we have driven the alt-right back to the shadows where they belong, given that a blue wave is coming, given that a whole generation of tyrants are about to pass, can I hear a Kissinger? Given that the fascist creep is on the run, given that we're running down the walls, given that 2018 is the year of momentum, given that we are finally ready to take environmental problems seriously, what does anarchist victory look like? Does it look like fighting off repression? Or does it look like material advances against the state, capitalism, and the industrial world powering both? What would those advances be? How about disarming the police, full stop? How about celebrating the end of the current economic boom and hastening the end? How would we do that? Is the logic of find each other and get organized enough? And how do we get started when we're trapped by these stupid websites? Yes, like this one, and social media platforms. If a revolution is possible in our lifetime, where do we begin? And this week, I'm joined by RFA. Thoughts?
Hello. So, first of all, I think that the question itself is a little silly. I don't think that there is any one the anarchist revolution, and I think that perhaps any anarchists or people that describe themselves as anarchists who focus on something like the revolution are probably doing their lives a disservice. I'm hesitant to use that word, but or that phrasing, but that's my initial reaction to it.
So if the central question of that topic, of this topic of the week, is if a revolution is possible, which obviously is a big, you know, if, where do we begin? Doesn't necessarily ask for like a singular or like one revolution. It sort of instead sort of says, how do we begin, whether it's a multitude of revolutions or a rhizome of revolutions or a Trotskyist revolution, you know? That's just has the next one lying in wait. I mean, I guess the question for me, how I'd respond to that would be to say that perhaps to begin, you begin. And so on that level,
yeah, for
I
sure.
Don't totally disagree with the find each other But, you know, I guess I'm like a lot of people. I have found some people. Do you,
for sure.
Do you respond in a reactionary way towards the revolution because you feel like you haven't found the people you want to do it with yet?
No, it's interesting because most of my closest anarchist friends would consider themselves class struggle anarchists. They very much believe in the revolution, the revolution. They and I agree, you know, in the idea of smaller insurrections, sure. But I think, you know, like I have said before, as I get older, the idea of placing so much emphasis on this future possibility, I'm not sure is holding my interest, or I'm not sure it's the direction that I or people that I would call my comrades that may have an interest in the revolution would necessarily want to go down. Finding each other, what were the other?
Well, the passage from the topic. Was,
yeah, getting organized, finding each other. Yeah, it's a very activist-y idea of anarchism, and it's something that I'm not necessarily the best person to talk to about this, I think.
Well, I think that every anarchist has an opinion on these topics, which is why I actually don't think it matters that much, you know, who it is that I talk to, just sort of try to get a multitude of opinions and conversations started. So, just to speak on behalf of your friends who aren't here, mm-hmm. What do you think a class struggle person, you know, if we're on the cusp today, what does a class struggle type person think is the next step? In other words, how would one organize the class in the context of, you know, late capitalism, post-industrial America?
I think it's reflected in what we're seeing all over social media and in the streets as well, and that is they are on this constant quest for growing numbers, for spreading their ideas, for building the mass.
What's an example of a recent red anarchist movement in that direction?
Oh, geez. I guess we could look at the latest thing. You know, I've kind of tuned out a lot of different actions that have been happening. But I would say, you know, or we could, you know, point a finger and say at Antifa, how they are organizing, how they are, you know, gathering, how they are spreading a message and getting people involved and interested. It is an example.
But Antifa is small. Like, you know, on some level, I think it prides itself on the fact that once the fascists have been defeated, the Antifa would disappear. Like, in other words, it's not a revolutionary organization. It's a entirely a reactionary organization, or at least that was
sure.
My understanding in the past. When I look at the front page of Anarchist News right now, the closest thing I would point to as being a red anarchist sort of assertion of strength isn't even on the front page. It would be maybe the cruise networks and federations, the podcast conversation from It's Going Down on the Radical Education Department. And their idea of insurrection and councilism.
yeah, definitely. I think that's a great example of one of the strategies that anarchists who are interested in the idea of the revolution have made.
I think that, you know, one of the things that is a little, I guess we'll say, lacking in anarchist spaces is revolutionary aspirations. You know, obviously I'm not exactly someone who sort of says, like, the revolution's possible, or, you know, we can could do it or something. But the idea of aspiring to something that is impossible and doing it anyways, that does seem to be like something that perhaps is missing since the rise of like nihilistic, pessimistic, you know, critical to no end anarchism.
Paranoid poem for times of turmoil. My childhood was happy. It had nothing to do with the way I turned out later. Roberto Bolaño. In the quarantine, I can nurse a dying dream, my tunnel vision, my science fiction and noir. Now everything's falling to pieces. I am looking for the winning scratcher, stuffed into a trash bag of hopes and failures. You were the one who told me that God was like the lottery and would give me a second chance. I was resigned to drowning in the disaster. My horoscope said, run while you still can. Then we ran out of coffee. The neighbors were watering their lawns and putting out a fire on the sidewalk. The next day, things were totally back to normal. Everyone was taking their pills on schedule, and we did laps around the bed and then slept again. A writer once told me to dive into my craft with no swimming lessons and without an inflatable vest. Next, I was being waterboarded by the Muse in Guantanamo Bay, renovated as a space station to save Earth's reputation. I died and came back to life as our rocket left the Earth, and saw the angels, but still woke up as an atheist. Now I can sustain momentum long enough to scream in space and disintegrate in a dust on the thruster engines. She said love was like an oil spill. We would all be sorry afterwards, but they'd never turn the drills off. That was the last thing I remember before the memories I ruthlessly suppressed. I picked you flowers in heaven. You were an angel and I was a bucket of water. Then we were washing the walls off, graffiti marks and oil paint running down a rag. First I was writing a novel, then it turned into the Vietnam Memorial, and nobody cared or could tell the difference. I am joining a conspiracy of fish to smash the windows out at Aquarium of the Pacific. Don't let them see you flop. I want to believe we can find a way out to the ocean. Now the informants are jockeying for position, pushing and shoving for a handler in the highest places. They'll throw us all in a mass grave, and someone will pay a robot to kick the dirt in. I am melting like a gram of heroin. Someone is sucking me up a straw on the strength of a death wish. Soon we'll be closing in on it and live with the risk like a bank robber out the door. I've overcharged the batteries. Someone clean the acid from my metal disc. A spider's web is spun and spun and spun and spun again when the fly breaks bad for the long haul. A poem could explode at the end. They've left me here with the matches and no plan B. Underground, in the bunker, digging out a tunnel to the planet's core.
And that's a wrap. This podcast is the effort of many people. This episode was sound edited by Rocinante Way. That's me. The Praxis of Pragmatics, Part 2 by Suds. Guest editorial, Why Anarchists Are Not Architects by Julian Langer. Thanks to Aragorn and RFA for the topic of the week discussion. And this week we added a short poem at the end by TriviaBot. To learn more, please visit anarchy101.org. books and other anarchist material at littleblackcart.com. And for up-to-the-minute news and commentary, anarchistnews.org. Cheers.
Dreaming of and throw it out the window, 'cause everything you